Okay. I sort of assumed that you may have gotten to the second line on Tedvav Ahmed Aleph, the Gufa. That was what I was guessing.
Good.
Good. Good. Because otherwise we were in big trouble there. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Yudchet Gazru, Ubiyudchet Nichlatu. So I guess you've been through these 18 before, or at least part of them. So 18 Gezeres Chamei Meidin, 18 Machlokets. On all, I assume all 18 of them, Beit Shammai disagree with Beit Hillel about them. So the Gemara says, "V'hatan Yehoshvu." I thought that they agreed about these. So the Gemara concludes, "Bo bayom nechaku ulemachar hushvu." That is, they disagreed at the time, and then afterwards, Beit Hillel, I believe, according to Rashi, Shechazru behen Beit Hillel. They will agree with Beit Shammai about these 18. Amar Rav Huna begim makom nechu Beit Shammai ubeit Hillel. So this is a brand new Gemara. That was really the truth is you probably should have done that as an end of last time because it's not really connected to anything. You probably know what's going on much better than I do. Amar Rav Huna begim makom nechu Beit nechu Shammai Hillel. There are three places where Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai disagree. Shammai Omer, the first case, and this is the most complicated case, this will probably take about 10 minutes to explain, but hopefully less. Shammai Omer Mikav Chala, Vehil Omer Mikabayim. So, essentially what the Halacha says, what the Torah says, is that you have to give a Reshit Arisa to the Kohen, to the priest. They're not arguing about the fact that you have to give a Beitza. Everybody agrees you have to give a Beitza. The question is, Beit Hillel says that, Beit Shammai says it has to be from a Chala. Why? Because he says it has to come from the amount that a normal person would bake in their own house. That would be 24 beitzot, 6 beitzot to a lug, 4 lug to a kav, and therefore you need to take, as soon as you hit that personal-sized challah, house-sized challah. Beit Hillel says, no, it's not true, mikabayim, which means essentially you only have to give 1 out of 48. But again, they're not arguing about a beitzah. Everybody agrees you have to give a beitzah. The question is, how big does the challah have to be? And Beit Hillel says it has to be the size of a sort of industrial challah, the kind of stuff that you might make in a shop. What?
A mitzvah challah.
Oh, you mean like the ones that they have in, probably even bigger than that. No, the kabayim is pretty big. So I'll tell you, a kav is 2 liters. A kav is 2 liters of flour. That's a decent amount of flour. You can make a lot of bread with 2 liters of flour. That's larger than like one of those packets, I believe, a little bit. I think those packets are what about maybe a liter and a half. So if you're talking 2 of those, you can make challah for quite a few Shabbatot for those. But maybe you're right. Maybe a mitzvah challah would be a good example. So chamayomim lo kedivrei zev lo kedivrei sel kavu mechzer. Now here it gets a little complicated. So I'll explain what's going on. The way he gets kavu mechzer is like this. He's saying we're not going by what a person normally makes, what a shopkeeper normally makes. We're talking about the biblical amount. What was the biblical amount? The biblical amount was an omer. An omer. Now here's how the math works out. I have to jot it down for myself. An omer is 1/10 of an ephah. Omer is 1/10 of an ephah, and an ephah is 18 kavs. What does that mean? That means that the normal amount that I would bake to bring the omer for Shavuot, this is a general omer amount. That would be 1.8 kavs. Does that make sense? Because an ephah is 18 kavs, so 1/10 of that is 1.8 kavs. But then the question is, why doesn't he then say 1.8? Why does he say 1.5? And the answer is, because when they got to Yerushalayim, that was the size when they were in the Midbar. But when they got to Yerushalayim, they increased the size of the Shiurim, which we sort of know today, right? Like our beitzahs are bigger than we can imagine a beitzah being. Our zayif are bigger than we can imagine a zayif being. What they did was they took the shear and they increased it by 20%. What happens when you multiply 1.5 by 1.2 is you wind up with 1.8. So essentially, it's 1.5, but it's not 1.5 of the original biblical measures. It's 1.8 of the biblical measures. But since our 1.5 is bigger than their 1.5, our 1.5 fits into the old 1.8. Does that make sense? Essentially, it's 1.8, but if you decrease that by 20% because you increase the shiurim, then you only get 1.5 that you have to bring in and still be biblically viable. Biblically viable, because they're all going to the biblical. Now, Mishag Dilu Hamidot, Amru Chameshit Revayim Kama Chayivim Chala. Then what happened? Then what happened to Sanhedrin? Everybody moves to the Galil, to Tzipori, to Galil, and then they increased it by another 20%. So if I take 20% and I deduct that from the 1.5, I wind up with 1.25. You follow what I'm saying? That is, the old 1.5, now our new 1.25, which is bigger, would fit into the old packages that said 1.5 because ours is bigger. So therefore, you were reduced from 1.8, which was the original biblical size, to 1.5, which is still the biblical size, but smaller in modern terminology. And then once they increase it again, I'm still taking the biblical size of the original Omer, but it looks like 1.25 on the packages, because the packages now read bigger than they used to. Does that make sense? So you're not really decreasing the amount that you have to give. You're decreasing in the amount of the measurement that you have to give based on the package, what it reads on the package. But if you compared a Tzipori 1.25 package, it would exist exactly like Yerushalmi 1.5 package, which would look exactly like a Midbar 1.8 package. And then Rabbi Yossi Omer says, hey, oh, so that's where Chamesh Ravaim is, because Chamesh Ravaim is 125 increased by 20%, that's 1.5. Rabbi Yossi Omer, hey, Pturim v'hei va'od chayavim. This is not an argument about measurements. He's just saying, listen, I agree with the 1.25, but if it's exactly 1.25, you don't have to bring. It has to be 1.25 plus something. I would assume that Rabbi Yossi, I'm not entirely sure, but I assume Rabbi Yossi's law would probably apply to, or maybe he's cholik on everybody else. So I guess everybody else simply says that you need exactly the measurement that was listed in the Bible, and Rabbi Yossi is reading the biblical passage to require you have to be a little over the top. Once you're a little over the top, that's when you have to give the omer. But if you're right on the line, then you don't. Okay, is that okay? And we'll move on to the second case.
So why did then Shammai and Hillel come with 1 and 2 cabins?
Because they didn't think it was a biblical oriented. They thought it was, you know, the common man, what he does today. And Beit Shammai was thinking that it's the common man, and therefore you have to give on quite a bit. And Beit Hillel was saying it was the common businessman, and therefore it would have to be a less amount.
Why does it matter if you're giving the same amount?
What's that?
If you're giving the exact same amount, why does it matter?
The question is, when do you chayiv to give it? How big of a challah do I have to bake before I rip off the same amount and give it to it? The percentage, the amount doesn't change. The volume of what I give doesn't change, but the percentage, my total challah, does change quite a bit. What's that? Yeah, you wouldn't be allowed. You wouldn't have to take it off. I think what we do today is, because we're in chutzah, I have to take most of it take off without a bracha. What's that? Oh, so what if you make it home?
So,
right. So then they take for sure challah taken. No doubt about it. Leah makes her own challah. So the question is, what does she do? So first of all, I doubt she ever really gets up to 1.5 kapha. That's a tremendous amount. But what we do instead, she takes off a little bit without a bracha, and then you just either leave it or you burn it up or whatever it is. We're going to get to the issue of the difference between leaving it to rot and burning, but today I think it doesn't really make a difference either way. So v'idach, I'm not sure though. I'm not sure. Ask your local rabbinic authority. V'idach, if your wife bakes. V'idach, I got another difference. Hillel omer male hin mayim shuavim psulim. Male hin mayim shuavim psulim et hamikvah. So according to Beit Hillel, if you have a hin of Malehin Mayim Shubin of drawn water, which is usher for you need flowing water for a mikvah, and then you put that into the mikvah, that's post to the mikvah. Now that's only post to the mikvah if the mikvah has not yet gotten up to its, I believe, 30, how many lugim of a mikvah? 40 saw, right? Which is how big is this saw? I don't know, biggest saw is pretty big, no? How much does it come out to altogether? I don't have the measurements here, but it's a pretty large amount. But and a hin, the question is, what's the ratio between a hin and a sa?
Is 6 kav.
Is 6 kav?
Yeah,
I'm not sure how big a hin is.
24 lug.
But how big is a hin?
One sa is 144 beis.
Right. Well, kav is 2 liters. How many sign in a
six?
So then that's 2 liters times 6 is 12 liters, and then 4 times 40, 12 is 40, would be 60. 60 liters of would make the minimum size mikvah, I believe. The question is, how big is a hin? Does it have a list there how big a hin is? Because that's the real question here. Does Rashi? Oh yeah, here it is. Hin is yud bet lug. Is yud bet lug. Now there are 4 lugs in a sa. So that means, I'm sorry, 4 lugs in a kav, so therefore it is 3.
Well, 24 lugs in a sa. Right?
6 kavs in a sa. 24 lugs in a sa. A hin is 12 lugs, that's one half of a sa'. Oh, good, so a hin is one half of a sa'. Good, okay, so that's it. Am I getting that right? I'm pretty sure I'm getting that right. All right, so one half of a sa' will mess up anything less than 40 sa's in your mikvah. Shechayv adam lomar b'lashon rabo. Now, the Gemara sort of adds in a side point, which is, why does he use the word hin? Hin's a very strange language to use. See, we struggle with the word hin because nobody uses it anymore. That's a biblical term, not a Mishnah term. It had already gone out of style in the Mishnah, in the Mishnah's times. So what they say is that he learned that in the name of his Rebbe, who learned the name of his Rebbe, I guess, all the way up to Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore they use the old ancient language of hin. I believe that the immediate Rebbe is probably talking about either Shmaya or Avtalon. Yeah, Shmaya and Avtalon, right. Shmaya and Avtalon were the converts, by the way, who converted to the Judaism. Because of that, Torah Shabbat was saved. Yeah, okay. Shammai Omer Tisha Kabin. Shammai says, no, not so much. Not 12 Kav, just, all you need is 9 Kav, as opposed to 12 Kav. And Chomomim, which means that is much more machmir, because less will possibly mikvah. The Chomomim, lo chidivrei zeh, lo chidivrei zeh. You're both wrong. Ad shebo bed gardim, until two weavers came mishara aspra from the garbage gate shebi yushalayim veheidu mishum shmaya v'atalon sheshloshim lugin mayim shuvim sulanta mikvah, which is much more machmir. V'kimu chachamim et divrayim, they established their words. By the way, what's interesting there is not quite clear whether chachamim knew immediately what to do. Chachamim seem to know that Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel are wrong, right? Because they say lo kedivrei zeh v'lo kedivrei zeh, but they don't seem to offer their own opinion. So either they were just holding back and they wanted to wait till they got testimony and witness for it so they would be believed, or they really didn't know. They just knew that, I don't know what the answer is, but I know it's not the answer that I heard. But then these two guys came over, and Rashi mentions the reason why we mentioned that they're weavers is that even the poorest of the poor used to go and learn Torah from the Beit Medrash, is not excused from the Beit Medrash. The Idach, a next one. Shammai Omer Kol Nashim Dayan Shatan. Beit Shammai is incredibly makil here. He says that essentially, whenever a woman checks a bedika and she comes out red, she comes out tamei, that's when she starts being tamei, and not before that period of time. What does that make a difference? I think it makes a difference if she touched truma or she touched another food before that time. You don't have to worry about it. It's only from the time that she actually does the bedika and checks. Even though obviously she may, this. Obviously, something may have happened before the bedika. So the Hillel Omer may pekida lipkida, no good. It's from check to check, which means if you check now and then you check, the last time you checked was 2 days ago, it was the 2 days ago that you would be considered tummy for that entire period. Vafilu the yamim harbe, even a whole long time. Much Hillel is much more stringent by extremely. Yeah, very sad. I'm not entirely sure. I believe, according to this, Hillel would date you all the way back to the previous period. But I'm not sure. What if it was the first bedikah you did after, let's say, came out of the mikveh after, let's say, 7 plus days, 10 days, and then you did a bedikah another 20 days, and then you saw something? I'm guessing that Hillel would backdate the tumah until the previous, assuming that you might get one need on top of the other. I don't know if that's true. I don't know. But that seems to be the way the Gemara is reading now, and I didn't analyze it any more deeply, even though it seems a little absurd, because she's not going to get a nida right after, merely after the other one, but that certainly seems what it seems to be saying. Okay, so we're finding that he's not so machmir as we thought. That was only if in the intermediate period, she saw something. That was a bad use of words. In the intermediary time, she saw a period. Anyway, Chamomim, lo kedivrei zeh, lo kedivrei zeh, you're both wrong. Ama me'eit le'eit mima'eit aidea mifkida lepkida, umifkida lepkida, ma'eit aidea le'eit. What you do is you take the lesser of the two times. Either, which 8 late is a 24-hour period, which means the maximum amount of back tumah you're going to get is 24 hours. If you did a bdika in between the 24 hours, let's say I did one 10 hours ago and I do one now, and now I show blood, I don't have to date back 24 hours, I'll just get back 10 hours. If I haven't done a bdika for 2 days, 3 days, for 10 days, I only have to max out at 24-hour period. Okay? That's essentially the three cases that disagree. Betulaka, the Gemara says, they only disagree 3 times? Va'ika, I'll give you another case where they disagree. Hillel, Omer, l'smoch. V'shamayamar, lo l'smoch. Now, I didn't make a note to myself of this, so now I'm going to take a look at Rashi, because I learned this, but... Whether you're allowed to bring, there's a machloket, whether you're allowed to bring an adava and a neder, and two different types of korban, one right after the other in Yom Tov. And I don't know, according to Beit Hillel, he says you're allowed to bring one right after the other, and according to Beit Shammai, you're not allowed to bring one after the other. So the Gemara says, Ki kamar Rav Huna hecha deleka pulta derabuta bahadayu. No, no. The reason Rav Huna just cited those three is that's where there's an original argument, as opposed to a previous argument that they are restating, that they're reliving. Okay? That is, the argument about the smicha of the smichud of the Nedarim and the Davot is not original to Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. Therefore, I want to mention it. We're only mentioning the three cases where Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai were the original participants of the argument. Wait a second, I have another original argument between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. It says that Sibur Lagat, Habotzer Lagat, Shammai Omer Hokshar, the Hillel Omer Lohokshar. What if somebody does the Betzira of the grapes directly to the Gat? So Shammai, the Gat is the wine press. Shammai says it's Hokshar to be Mekabel Tuma, because while it's still on the vine, it's not until it's in its prepared state, that it's prepared to be, I guess, to be eaten or processed, I think. Just a second. Yeah, you put them in there to step on them. You're not going to make you're not trying to make tzimukim, or you're not trying to make raisins out of them. So the tzimukim mashka yotzeim ein machshirin delo nichole. Yeah, essentially the wine. Yeah. If you put them in the gat, then you want the juice that comes out of them. But if you put them into just to let them dry out in the sun, the juice that comes out of them is not considered mukshar for according to Beit Hillel. Yeah, okay. This is talking about the extra juice, I believe, that's coming out of the gat. That is, you put the grapes in the gat, and they start melting a little bit. That is, juice starts flowing out of them. You're not interested in this juice at all. That is, when you're turning grapes into raisins, I believe this is the way it is. When you're turning grapes to raisins, I don't care about the juice. It's never mukshar for tumah because you don't want the juice anyway. It's just rot. It's just drying off to run away. What if you're putting in the gat there? You're making wine. The wine could definitely be mekabel tumah. But the question is, at what point? When I start pressing at it, so that juice is definitely mukshar l'tumah. But what about the juice that just happens to be flowing off of it? The grapes certainly are being prepared for the sake of juicing, and therefore they can be mekabel tumah. But the juice that's coming off of them now is not. It's just runoff juice. The question is, would that be considered the kind of juice which could be mekabel tumah or not? So Beit Shammai Omer that it is, and Beit Hillel Omer said that it's not. So the Gemara says, no, bar minayu, dahu katam kashatek le Hillel l'shammai. That doesn't count because in the end, Beit Hillel agrees with Beit Shammai's position, so even though it's an original argument, that does not count among the three. Okay? And that's where the Gemara is going. Any comments or whatnot on what you see or what you don't see on that sort of thing? Okay. So, continuing on. Yosi ben Yoezer, East Strait of Yosi ben Rav Yochanan, East Yushlaim, Gazru, Tuma, Al Eretz Ha'amim, Val Kliz Chuchi. What they essentially say is that if Truma touches dirt, or I guess enters Chutz La'aretz, that would include America, I believe. Al Kliz Chuchit, they also said that a glass that you buy from a store is tamei by default. That is, originally the law was only Kli Cheres. That if I went to a store and I saw Kli Cheres, then I had to assume in a shop that was owned by non-Jews, I had to assume that was tamei. But now it is not only Cheres, but it's also glass. So So the Gemara says, no, that's impossible. How could Rav Yosi and Rav Yochanan have established this? Vaharabanim deshmanim shana gazor. Those wasn't Rav Yosi and Rav Yosef. How do I know that? Those were the 80-year rabbis. The 80-year rabbis, meaning the rabbis who were around making laws 80 years before the fall of the temple, i.e. 20 years before the Common Era, which means in Herodian times, right? Herod ruled from 40 to 3 B.C. The Amar Rav Kana Keshachal Rav Yishmol Bar Rav Yosi Shalchulo. When Rav Kana says that when Rav Yishmol got sick, Rav Yosi sent to him. I'm sorry. when Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yossi got sick, he sent him a letter, Rav, Rebbe, Rabbi Yishmael, Emor lanu bet v'gimel dvarim shamarta mishum abicha. Tell us three or four things that you heard from your father. So Shalach Lahem, that this is Rabbi Yossi. Shalach Lahem, he sent to them, Kach amar Abba, this is what Abba said, Kuf pei shana ad shalo charav habayit, 180 years before the Bayit was destroyed, that would put us in 110 BCE, which would be Chashmonaim times, that would be in about Maccabean times, Yehuda Maccabee, later, that would be Yonatan Maccabee, I believe, Pashta Machud Arisha, that's when Rome came in through the door, Al Yisrael, Peisana Ad Shalokar V'Mishkan, 80 years before the Mishkan was not destroyed, before the temple was destroyed, Gazru Tuma Al Eretz Amim V'Kol HaZchuchit, and that's when the Tuma was placed on Chutz Aretz and also on glass. Memshana, 40 years before destruction, that would be 30 CE. Lokar Abayit, Galtala Sanhedrin, that's where Sanhedrin had to sit, Bechanuyot, which was some other place in Har Abayit, but not in its classic place. What does that prove? That proves that it was the 80-year guys who established it. So obviously what we have to establish is that Rabbi Yossi ben Yoezer, Yosef ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan are not 80-year guys, but we're going to take a little detour. Everybody ready for the detour? There's a detour. The detour is follows. Lamai Hilchata. What do I need to know? What is the what's significant about the fact that the Sanhedrin moved? What is this? Like, I don't understand. Rav Yossi wanted to tell him some news about the travel. It was like a travelocity. So where it says, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Bar Avdimi, Lomar Lanu Shalo, Danu Dine Knasov. They stopped doing torts cases. That is, if you steal from somebody, you have to pay five fourths or whatever. That's when they stopped doing that. So the Gemara says, Dine Knasov Ksalkadaita. You think they stopped doing Dine Knasov? It's not possible. So the Gemara says, no, I got it wrong. Ela Eim Elecha, I'll tell you, Danu, Lo Danu Dine Fasher. As soon as the Sanhedrin left its established place on Har Abayit, they no longer were able to do death penalty cases. And that took place in the year 10. Do I have that right? What year was that? 40? 40, and therefore, yeah, 10 of, sorry, 30 of the common era. V'chi tema petshana nami in huhavi. If you want to say that these two guys, Rav Yossi bar Rav Yezer, Rav Yossi bar, what was the other name? Rav Yossi ben Yoezer, he's training Rav Yossi bar Yochanan, he's just lying. If you want to say they were around for 80 years, you can't say that. Why? V'ha tamya Hillel v'Shimon, Hillel, then Shimon, then Gamliel, and then Shimon. The first Shimon is the Shimon, the father of Gamliel, and the second one is Shimon ben Gamliel. Nagu Nisiotan, I think I guess Lefnei Habayit Mea Shana. They started their rule 100 years before the destruction, which means Hillel started working 100 years before the destruction of the temple. So he was around the year 30. A little earlier of the before the common era. The Ilu Yossi Ver Yosef, he's trade of Yossi Ober Yavelchan, Havi Kad Matuvan. We happen to know, I'm sorry, Nisiotam Lefnei Habayit Mea Shana. They were 100 years beforehand. If they were 100 years beforehand, that puts you at 30 BCE. Ah, that's right. But we said that Rav Yossi bar and we said that 80 years before the destruction of the temple, which is already probably in Gamliel's time, is when they established the laws of Tuma. But we happen to know that Rav Yossi ben Shreda and Rav Yossi Rav Yochanan were even before Hillel, which means that they were before 100 years. They couldn't have been around in the 80-year Beit Din. The Gemara says, Ela atu inhu gzur agusha lisrof avira velo klum. V'atu rabbanan depei shana gazra avira le talot. What that means is, what are these guys were gozer on Chutz Laretz. But what they did was, they were gozer lisrof. If it touched a piece of dirt in the Chutz La'aretz, the Truma, then you'd have to burn the Truma because it would be considered actual Tame. Even though it was only Suffolk Tuma, at Suffolk Tuma you don't have to burn, you only have to leave to rot. But since they want to be extra careful, they really want to come down on people that were leaving Eretz Yisrael, so they said you had to burn the Truma that touched. The Ba'avira of the Loklum. But on the air, if it just walked into the terror, like it was in your pocket when you walked into Chutz La'aretz, that you didn't have to do anything to the Truma. After Rabbanan to pay, but then, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, that's where the Gamliel, the Shurim Shimon Gamliel, they came around, and they said that Avira Litzlot, that means you don't have to burn it, if you walk in, you have to let it rot. You have to let it rot. So essentially, it wasn't just the touching, but it was mere presence in Chutz La'aretz that was done in the 80, but the original Gezeira started with Rav Yossi Bar Yoezer, Rav Yossi Bar, what was the other one? Rav Yossi Yoezer, Rav Yossi Bar Yochanan Ish Yushalayim. Continuing on. Lememra, are you trying to say the Chad Exirta Hula Srefa? You're trying to tell me that everybody agreed right away that they were going to burn up the piece of, they were going to burn up the Truma as soon as it hit a piece of Chutzart? That was always established and never changed? Vahamar, Ilfa says, Yadayim Tchilat Gezeratan Lisrefa. The first thing that got established for burning was hands. The hands, if it touched Truma, would be considered, if the hands were Suffolk Tanei, then you would burn them up. I guess because people probably got loose in what they touched, what they didn't touch, and the hands were Tanei. Yadayim hu ditchilat gziratan l'sreifa, ha midi achayitu. What does that mean? That means that only by hands. That was in the case where you had to assume that you were tummy and therefore you had to burn it. But by everything else, obviously not. Otherwise they couldn't have specified yadayim if it was agreed that back in the year 150 or so before the destruction of the temple, that land of Chutzarts, if it touched dirt from Chutzarts, it would also be burnt. And la'atu into, so we're gonna change the story a little bit. Al'atu inu, Rav Yossi and Rav Yossi, Achi Yoezer and Rav Yochanan, Yoezer and Bar Rav Yochanan, Gazer Agusha L'tlot. Ah, that's what they did. They didn't say to burn it right away. They said to leave it to rot right away out of something. Va'avir alo gazer klum. But on the air, they said nothing. Va'atu rabbanan depei. There's originally, it was only hands to burn. Well, if it touched a piece of dirt, like if it fell on the ground or you picked up a piece of dirt and you touched it to Truma, that was only the throat. You didn't have to burn it, you just have to leave it to rot. And the air, nothing. And then at 80 years before the temple, would be around Shimon or Gamliel's time in the year 30 during Herodian times, that's when they said, you know what, we're going to burn if it touches the ground of Chutzlaret, and Avira, we're going to tow that. And Avira, we're going to have to let it rot. And you can't use it. If you don't burn it, you just let it rot. Va'akati? Really? Is that so? Ba'usha Gazor, they didn't make the rule then. They made the rule in Usha. That was a different time altogether. That wasn't the 80-year period. That was a different period. It's not. Alvav Sfeiko Tzorfim Et Atruma. There are seven doubts that you have to, for seven possibilities that if you're in doubt, you have to burn the Truma. What are they? Al Suffolk Beta Pras. That would be a graveyard. If it walks into a graveyard, you have to worry that there may have been a tree there. And therefore, by the way, what do Kohanim do in a case of a funeral? What? Yeah, so what did I say? Vav. Did I say seven? That was a mistake. Right, six, thank you. Well, by the way, Kohen, Chas Rahman son, you have to go to a funeral. Are you allowed on the roads, or you have
to... There's two things. Some people, go inside and try to stay 6 feet
from the grass area.
Yeah, but we stay outside.
Because you're worried of the tree cover?
Yeah, there's overhangs, and who knows where water borders really are. So we stay completely outside the gate, and we say prayers to someone that we're outside. We cannot enter at all.
Okay, thank you. So on these five... Six. No, I was just asking. As a Levi, I never. As a Levi, I don't have to. The only time I ever saw a funeral of a Kohen was a friend of mine in Israel who lost, unfortunately, their daughter to immune deficiency, and it was Har HaZeitim. And Har HaZeitim, what they have is very interesting. Next to the graves, they have these large. You know how in Jerusalem they have these big stone fences. So they have these large stone fences that are like 4 amos wide. That are really next to the grave. It's like, here the grave site, and then they've got these fences that run like terraces all along. And I think that makes its own reshut. And there are no trees up on Har HaZeitim. So what they did was they got on the, these walls essentially, which I think were. I mean, this is what I saw. I didn't know at that time. I was a kid. I didn't know the halachas or not. So I assumed the halacha was that since it was own reshut, it was considered outside because it was raised up as essentially a fence, like standing on a fence.
Right.
I assume in America you don't get anything like that.
There are also cemeteries where they leave plots along the perimeter, like along the fence, so Kohanim can buy those. So therefore you could actually
stand outside the gate and still be there. Right, right, right.
Close enough to see the,
right.
I suppose only Kohanim get to have the outside.
I guess it depends on the cemetery.
But Rahman al-Watan, if a theoretical family, Kohen lost a family member, close family member.
Onto the
pathway.
Because
the assumption is that in today's day and age, there's always somebody to take care of what actually has to be done, so therefore it doesn't demand the direct action of it.
My father, the
the Akatis, that's all. But Ushagazer, Ditznan, Alvav, Sveko, you didn't hear me, by the way, I accidentally said five just a minute ago. So I'm like circling around the sixth number, but I can't seem to nail it down. Maybe I should just say, what? Maybe I should just say Vav and so forth. So there's six Sveikot that you have to burn the Truma. One is Suffik Beta Pras. Beta Pras, Pras means the overhang, the spread. The Fros means spread. So if it goes to a cemetery, even though it's not guaranteed that it came within the area or it came in under cover, you have to worry about it. So they decide that you're going to burn anything, that a Truma that walks into a that gets carried in the cemetery. But Al Suffik Afar Haba Me'eretzanim. So if you don't know whether the dirt comes from Chutzlaris, then you have to burn. Val Suffik Bidei Am Aretz, and also Suffik whether this clothes is the clothes of a non-Jew, if it touches that. Val Suffik Kalim Anim Tzim.
What did you say,
non-Jew?
Did I say Am
Aretz? Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say, Am Aretz, right, I apologize. From a non-learned, from a Jew who really doesn't know, a Jew that can't be trusted on these matters of staying Tahor. Val Suffik Kalim HaNimtzayim, and also on pottery that you find, the tools, utensils that you find, I believe what that means, in a shuk, like you find among, in a marketplace of non-Jews, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see if I'm right. I don't know if you find a commentary faster than I do.
They were found in the street.
They were found in the street.
The likelihood
that
they were contracted
tumor from a Tamei Tesserae. Okay. Val Suffik HaRukin, also if you see like a spittle, then you have to assume that it's a zav. That there's possibility that it's a zav because you can't really. It's all milky and stuff like that. And al safek me raglayim, and also urine. Al safek me raglayim adam shekneged me raglayim behema. That is behema. I don't have a problem with, because behema is never going to be. That is me raglayim aren't matame, even though you kind of think that it should be by itself. It really shouldn't be matame. It's just urine. The problem is that if it comes from a human being, there may have been a ganimri flow in it as well. It may have been a zav flown as well, and be metame. Ah, so therefore, if I have a human next to animal, I have to assume that the whole kit and caboodle, I believe, is, and the truma touched it, I have to assume that the whole thing is tame. I think I'm learning that right. Let me just do a check with Rebuta Ashwin and the low tame of Midahani the name, and Nani Hat. So you say, since the behemoth was mutter, so therefore I could, it's like a spec faker. That is, I'm not sure what it's saying is I'm not sure what it's touched. The only reason it's already a suffix that there's a gonorrhea flow inside the male inside the human urine. Now the human urine is in the face of it's connected or across or close by the animal, so therefore I could say it's like a double suffix, I think. So therefore, why should it be machmir? And the answer is, you have to be machmir, you have to assume that it touched the human, and the human urine. You have to assume that the human urine may have had zav in it, and therefore it is tameh. I believe I'm learning that correctly. So al vadai magain v'al suffik tumatan sorfin et truma. Now, I don't like the word va'al there. I believe it's changed with something else. Sarek lomar shehu, which means al vadai magain shehu suffik tumatan sorfin et truma. If you're sure that it touched them, and it's suffik tamei, then you have to burn the truma. Rav Yosef Omer, afal suffik megaan bershuta yachid sorfin. Rav Yosef says that even if you're not sure it touched, you just think it touched, in bershuta yachid, you are sorfin. That is, we're extra machmir in bershuta yachid. The chachamim omerim bershuta yachid, you're tolin, then you only have to let it rot, but Rishud HaRabim, then you are Tahorim. Then you could say that it never made contact, therefore it's Tahor. V'amar Ula, Elu Vav Sfekot, Be'usha Hitzkinu. And those are the ones that were made in Usha. What's the question in the end? The question in the end is, one of those Sfekot is the Afar Habame Eretamim. And we were talking specifically about Sreifa. So how could you say that it was made at a certain time, let's say in Chet, when in fact it was made in Usha? So the Gemara says, Atu, so now it's going to change the story a little bit. We have now three levels of changes of laws. We thought we only had two. We thought we only had Rav Yosef Bar Yoezer, we had Rav Yosef of Yochanan, and then we had the Sanhedrin of the 80. But now we have three. We have Rav Yosef Ben Yoezer, and Rav Yossi ben Rav Yochanan, that would be in about 130, let's say, before the destruction of the temple. Then we have 80 of this before the destruction of the temple, and they made more gzera. And now we have Usha, where they also made a gzera as far as burning. So now we need like a third level of step for everybody to be able to make a gzera about this land of Chutzlar. So what we have is the following: Elaatu inhu gazra agusha litzlot. So what was it? On touching in Chutzlaaretz, physically touching the dirt, then it's tolet. You let it rot. Avira loklum. If it was in the air, suspended in the air in Chutzlaaretz, then you don't have to worry about it. You can eat it. It's not something. Va'atu rabban d'shmonim shana. And in the 80 years before the destruction of the temple, in the year 30, gazru ibi v'idi litzlot. So what they did is they didn't change the touching the dirt. What they did is they increased the transmission in the air to the same level as the touching the dirt, that you have to make them both rot. Uba'usha gazru agusha l'srof avira kitakaikai. They left the avira as it was, which is l'tlod, and they ranked up the notch by the other one. So essentially it was like this. It was tola nothing, tola, srefa tola. And that's how they create three steps where everybody's making their own zera. What?
At the end
they were burned, but only when it touched, not when it was simply in the air. And when it was in the air, nobody ever got to that point. It was at tola. Klees brand new. Klees chuchi my time gazru ben rabbanan tuma. So wait a second. We said that a klees chuchi is tame. Some Rav Yochanan Amar Reish Lakish hold v'tchilat tam b'yatam in achol shavinu rabbanan kli cheres. Even though glass is different. But since cheres, it says, a cheres that comes from an akum is tameh, therefore we have to assume that since glass was made originally from processed, the same material, that is processed sand, therefore we're going to, true, we're not going to, we're no plug, we're going to say sand and glass, we're going to say glass is the same thing. Elameata lo tehei lehen tahara b'mikvah. But if that's true, if you're going to say the law is the same as far as earthenware, which is absorbent, porous, and glass, which is non-porous, then you shouldn't be able to take glass and dip it into the mikvah to be betired. So alma tnan ve'elu chotzin bekelim hazefet v'hamor bekleis chuchit. These are the things that you have to separate. You have to create a separation between the kelim so that the water can get to all parts of the keli. That would be zefet v'hamor. I'm sorry, chotzin bekelim hazefet v'hamor. I apologize. These are the things that create a separation between the keli and the water. It's zefet, which I guess is like pitch, and more is some other type of product. The chliz chuchit. This implies that chliz chuchit can in fact be dipped in the mikvah. But if you're going to say that the Rabbanan said that a glass originally comes from afar, we treat it as afar, you shouldn't be able to be tovel it. And here we are tovel it. So Gemara says, no. Hachal ma'iskin. This is what we're talking about. It got a hole in it. The heitif l'tochan avar. You put a hole in the glass, and you put lead in it. When I put a hole in the glass, then it exactly has the laws of a kli cheres. Kli cheres is now broken. It's not a kli. It's not mekabel tuma. So what do I? It's no longer treated essentially as cheres anymore. So by breaking the glass by putting a hole in it, I remove it from the property of being like it's equal to cheres. I then put a little bit of lead in it, so it's a functional. So it's a functional glass plate or whatever it is. Now I can be told it. Rav Meiri, and this is Rav Meir's opinion. I don't go after the majority. I go after the preservative. What that means, by the way, it works in modern day kashrus. If you have something which works as a preservative of something else, like gelatin, that type of thing, it's never batel b'shishim. You go after the thing which supports the other thing, even though the thing that supports it is much, much smaller in size. You go after that which maintains like the reality of the outside big thing. If it's supported by an inner construct of this little piece of lead, then you treat the whole thing as if it's lead, which could be tovel, and is not assumed to be tamei, and not like glass, which you cannot be tovel and which is considered to be tamei. If you have a glass plate which gets a hole, you put a hole in it, the heiti putochan avar, and you put a little bit of lead into it, or some kind of metal product. Amar Rav Shimon Ben Gamliel, Rav Meir Mitame. Rav Meir says it's still Tame. The Chachamim Mitame. Chachamim say that it is okay because it goes after the lead and it doesn't. No one goes after the glass / earthenware properties of it. And that's essentially, that's as far as I got. I left the last Elameata. And the reason why I left the Elameata is the whole next page deals with questions about this glass thing. So you may want to have, I don't know who does tomorrow, You may want, what? So you may want them to have to go over a little bit, because I think I gave a little short shrift to exactly what's going on here as far as the glass and the lead and the original property. So you may want to back them up to Kli Zchuchit, because then it kind of flows through with the next page or more. What? The last case was, the way I understand this, if it's glass, it's tummy. Because it's just like that, the Rabbanu Gazi treated it just like earthenware, which you have to shatter if you assume that it's tummy. There's no way to, I can't take an earthenware, which is tummy, and get it. There's nothing I can do with it. And, yeah, I believe that's correct. And therefore, we said, but if we're treating it for the same for everything, we should treat the same for mikvah also. If I can't tovel this, why can't I tovel that? So the answer is, because you're not told. If it was real glass, you really wouldn't be told it. But what we do is we put a hole in glass and you fill it up with a little bit of lead, I guess like a lead lining kind of thing, which supports the glass. I don't want to say like tempered glass, but maybe some, this sounds more like a hole that you just put like a piece of lead in it to serve as a support, like a plug the hole. And you do it on purpose, because by the minute you plug the hole, you're now breaking the kli. It's no longer considered kli charet, because it's not a kli anymore. Then when I remake it with the lead in the middle, I've not made a glass kli, which would have the same yisurim as I had before, but I'm making a lead. Why? Because according to Rav Meir, when you treat something as a substance, you don't go after the majority, you go after the thing which supports the overall structure. And since what's supporting the overall structure is this piece of lead, which is plugging up the hole, I can now look at this chuchit not as if it's made out of earthenware and sand, but as if it's made completely out of lead, and therefore I could be told that I could do anything I want, just like if it was a standard metal clay. I believe that's the correct way of learning this Gemara, although I rushed through it a little bit. But in any event, we're going to be going to more questions and answers about it. Yeah, we do tovel pure glass. I'm not sure that this is dealing with issues of kelim akum. I think this is dealing with issues of tuma. Yeah, I think this is dealing with issues of tuma, which is a little different. Yeah, it's correct. Yeah, it's true. You know, the rabbi used to say, we learn Gemara, what we consider, you know, they talk about truma like we talk about kashrus. You know, that was their bugaboo, and our bugaboo was kashrus. I guess for them, kashrus was a no-brainer. It was tuma that was hard to do. And for us, our focus is otherwise. So that's what I remember him saying on tape. Okay, very good. Oh, 42 minutes. Not too...